how long has it been since we stood in these corridors together?
I think it's 3 years, Christian. It is 3 years.
Julian Treasure, just watch you talk again, and it's a completely different talk, which is wonderful, obviously.
Well, hopefully, yes.
With so much inspiring and sometimes a little bit scary information.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be scared about out there. I was basically making the point that technology is not all good. And in fact, for the eyes, you know, it seems to be mostly positive. But for the ears, there are some downsides. And incidentally, for my audio view here, I'm with Christian Payne, otherwise known as Documentary, who travels the world doing amazing things. More of that later.
And we're simultaneously recording on two separate phones using Audioboo, like we're crossing the streams here.
Absolutely. This is like the Avengers going to DC or something.
We've been talking about multiple screens. We've been talking about how we are effectively being mugged for our attention by constant visual stimulation, and I do feel a little bit like I am mugged, and sound is taking second place to this. You talked a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think the overload of all of these streams, it shortens our attention span. It makes us less willing to entertain subtlety and to be present for a long period of time and give people time to develop points. You know, oratory has disappeared as an art form. They used to teach it in school, you know, once upon a time. Not any longer. Now they teach sound bites.
How do you feel, you know, deep down about what's happening to the potential for education in our schools when so little attention is being paid towards acoustics in architecture?
Yeah, it's such a huge point. The point I was making actually was really that we are obsessed with sending in communication. So I had a simple model of communication, which was you send, you receive, and there's a context for that. And we almost don't think about the context at all. So you and I, being sensitive people, have just come around the corner here to a place where there's a carpet and there aren't any people. Now, many people would do this in, you know, just out there in the foyer where it's incredibly reverberant and people are talking and so forth. Try teaching in that environment, which is what a lot of teachers have to do. And it's really difficult. So we're sending, you know, we spend billions on the curriculum, on the quality of teaching, on teacher training. We agonize about it almost daily on the radio and on the TV news. We never think about how well are the children listening and how good are the acoustics. Can they actually hear their education? And the truth is, half of them probably can't.
You also make the correlation to health, which I've never seen before, and rises in noise volume directly relating to rises in heartbeat tempo and the stress that causes.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a teacher who sued the government for vocal notes recently, got £140,000, but that's the least of it. The teacher's heart rate rises when the noise rises. I mean, that happens to you or me as well in any situation. So if suddenly a bus lets its air brakes off behind you, your heart rate will jump. So the trouble is teachers are in this environment all the time. And if it's 65 dB on average over a period of time, which it is now with group work, then there is a lot of evidence to show that that is causing them to have risk of heart disease. So they may well be shortening their life by working in that environment.
Do you ever just close your eyes and listen?
Oh yeah, a lot. I love doing that, actually. And we've done that with clients, you know, retail clients. We put a blindfold on them and walk them into their shop, and you should see their jaw drop, you know, because when your eyes are open, you have a kind of inbuilt compressor. You automatically adjust. If you see somebody dropping something, you know there's going to be a bang, and it doesn't startle you so much. Whereas if you just hear the sound of that on headphones, it would be truly shocking. So if you want to appreciate the true effect of the sound around you, well, yes, have a friend walk around with their hands on your shoulders and just close your eyes. It's magnificent.
How can we teach ourselves to listen again?
Well, I think there are five really important exercises we can do. One is silence, 2 minutes of silence every day. That really helps. And we don't get much silence. I love silence. It's a sound. It's not the absence of sound. I think it is a sound. But it's rare to find these days. And if you can't get silence, the nearest thing to it. Then I think there's a good exercise I call the mixer, which is listening to, there's a lot of sound around us at the moment, for example. Like there's a baby crying down there right now, which people can probably just hear. Well, that was down and to my left, to your right. So being acute and listening to the sources of sound around, how many individual sounds am I hearing all the time? That's unpicking this mess that's around us. Third is savouring the sounds that surround us in our daily lives. Mm. I did a chant course a few years ago with a wonderful guy called David Hikes in Denmark, where it was Mongolian overtone chanting. And after about 2 or 3 days of changing the overtones by the shape of my mouth, my hearing got liberated. I started to hear the overtones in everything. They exist all the time, in my voice, in your voice. That's how we know who's speaking. And yet we're not conscious of them. I could turn on a car engine and hear all the overtones of the engine. It was like seeing rainbows everywhere. That was an extraordinary experience. So I think there's a great deal that we can do by actively listening to what's going on around us. Then listening positions. This is the fourth of the five, where we can actually change the way we listen by moving to a different metaphorical position. Like if there's a house on a hill and you don't like the way it looks, you can get up and walk around the other side. Maybe it looks better from there. Most people's listening is a concrete bunker they've constructed many years ago, formed by their attitudes and beliefs and values and, to a degree, their intentions in a situation. They never move. They listen one way all the time. And sometimes that's not productive. So you can change that. You know, you can move from, for example, critical listening, where it's unpicking, you know, is that good? Is that right? How well is they do it? Are they doing that? That kind of critical listening. To empathetic, where you're just being with the other person, leaving them feeling understood and feeling their feelings. And then the final of the five, sorry, this has been a long rant, but I'm passionate about this. The final one of the five is, it's a trick for communication, for listening and communication, which I call RASA. Receive, that means looking like you're listening, like you are now. You're looking at me, you're nodding, you know, your body posture is towards me. I can tell you're listening to me. If you were looking down and playing with a keyboard, I would be a bit concerned. It's one of the things that bothers me about Google Glass. Because if we're all walking around with those things on, how will we ever know if anybody's really listening to us? They might be watching, you know, The Simpsons at the same time. So that's the R of RASA. A is appreciate, little noises, like, oh, that's interesting. I mean, you're doing that silently by nodding your head. That's the same thing.
Normally because I don't want to get in the way of your audio.
Of course, yeah. And being a good audio guy. The S of RASA is so, a word which incidentally I think is deeply abused by the technology community. Almost every sentence starts with the word so when you meet tech people. What's your name? So, I'm John. No, I don't quite understand how that works. So is a logical sequence of things. But if you're a so person in a meeting, it's really, really powerful because you're the person who says, so, what we've all just agreed is this. You gather it up, you put it aside, and everybody can move on to the next thing. And finally, the A is ask. Just ask questions. And that shows you've been paying attention. So, RASA. So those five, silence, the mixer, savouring, listening positions, and RASA, I think those are great practices, and I do encourage anybody listening to this to try one or two of them out and see how they go in your life. And you'll find your listening will become better and better.
It's fascinating, because listening to you right now is making me very aware of just this act that we're doing now, the kind of recording each other, which is very consciously wanting to document the moment. And I'm pretty convinced it's having an effect on me mentally and my focus as a result, obviously, because I'm very bad at the traditional type of interviewing, because it demands for me to almost be distracted for a moment while I think of the next question. That's why I prefer the conversational way, see where it goes.
I agree with you. And of course, speech writing, which is what I call that process, where actually people aren't listening at all. They're actually behind their eyes, they're writing their next bon mot and their next pithy little interlude, which is going to be much, much better than what's going on right now. That's not a particularly productive way to listen to people. So I agree with you. I think this, you know, conversation is really good. You can just, I mean, that's actually it's almost a Zen practice of being in the moment and just trusting that the next thing to come out of your mouth is going to be the right thing. You don't have to prepare it to the degree that many people think.
And we seem so uncomfortable with silence sometimes, especially within the context of a conversation.
Yes, most people are pretty scared of it. I mean, radio, of course, hate dead air, but in conversation, a lot of people feel uncomfortable if there's a lengthy silence. It's automatically assumed to be an awkward silence. Those two words are kind of together as a phrase that we use. It's an awkward silence. Well, not always. It can be a companionable silence, a comfortable silence of old friends. Those kind of silences are warm and friendly.
And also, in some ways, an illustrative silence. If, for example, I started a podcast called Dead Air, which I didn't do any talking in, it was just recording moments like this. Obviously, I would have to do it in stereo because I feel very dirty right now recording something that I feel is so important, talking about sound, but we're recording in mono.
Mm, yes, and that's a shame. Somebody just released a CD of The Silence in a Church. They recorded, I don't think the quality is that good by all accounts. I've just been seeing some tweets about it, but I'm going to check it out. I retweeted who tweeted me about it, and I've got to listen to it. But it's apparently you can just hear tiny noises give you a sense of the acoustics in the church. So you get a sense of the space you're in, which is, I think that's really interesting. Different qualities of silence, really. I don't suppose you encounter silence much on your travels, then. Where's the quietest place you've ever been, Christian?
I think it was a combination of two places. When I used to be a pastore, or a cow herder, shepherd as it's translated to, in the Swiss Alps.
Only Christian Payne could yield a sentence like that in conversation. Yeah, go on.
That was before my years of embracing tech in an almost obsessive manner. But yeah, I used to work in the Swiss Alps, and it was 6 hours from the nearest habitation to walk. And for me, the sounds of nature were not noise. I know they are technically, but it was so pleasing to be surrounded, and to actually, when I could hear the cows, realize the kind of communication that was going on. And when I tried to explain to people that I knew exactly what was going on in the valley by the sounds of those bells, whether a cow was eating, whether a cow was walking, whether a cow was actually rolling down a hill and needed assistance, and this kind of strange, almost cacophony breaking what is to many people quite silent was amazing. And the next place would probably be the Noidart Peninsula, another quite, I've never been to space or anything like that. I'd like to experience something like that. I was in a sensory deprivation tank, but because I was expecting total silence, it was quite noisy. I could hear the air conditioning and all kinds of stuff.
Most of those aren't that good. What about, have you perceived noise changing people's behavior? I mean, you've been to a lot of war zones, for example. You've been to a lot of very noisy cities, I imagine, and places where there's violence going on or whatever. Do you think noise is a factor in that, in human behavior?
Some of the scariest noise of, I mean, if I just go back a couple of weeks, I was walking through no man's land, a minefield in fact, coming through from Syria into Turkey. And I commented, and I believe I have this on audio somewhere, but I may have only shared it to app.net. And I'm saying to my friend next to me, how weird that we should hear this thunder when there aren't any clouds. And my friend turned to me and said, you do realise that that's mortifier. Because how long has it been? And I says, long enough, thank you very much, for me not to recognise mortifier. And I walked faster. I walked faster, and suddenly I was concerned with a sound that was actually quite beautiful in its kind of sub-bass sense. I'm more terrified by the sounds that would come through a wall in a hotel in a strange town, and possibly one of the scariest sounds for me personally that actually made me fear for my life were doors being kicked in a hotel room in Khartoum in Sudan.
Wow.
As people were looking for myself and a friend. Luckily we'd left the room we were in and hid in another one, but that was a countdown. So we're getting closer, and I thought, please don't come to this floor.
Wow.
So
that is scary.
It is incredibly powerful. I couldn't see anything to be scared of. I didn't have to.
Well, of course, filmmakers would tell you that 60, 70% of the emotional impact of a movie is the soundtrack. And if you've ever watched a great movie, you could watch anything, The Exorcist, whatever it is, greatest movies of all time. If you just watch them with location sound, they're rubbish. It's when you have all these clever tricks, like they introduce the sound of the next scene before the visuals. And there are all sorts of tricks for playing with emotions with sound that we don't notice because, again, of course, most people aren't listening consciously. It just goes straight to the gut. So what's the most beautiful sound you've ever encountered then? Where's a place you'd go back to listen to?
I recorded it.
Wonderful.
It was the first sound of my little boy as he entered the world. I wasn't allowed to video blog. I'm glad I didn't. I wasn't allowed to take photographs of that very intense and personal moment. So without permission, I reached into my pocket and I actually pulled out this app and I clicked record, and you can hear this little cry. Oh, getting emotional just remembering the sound.
That's so beautiful.
And me say, it's a baby.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful. But you know, we were talking last night about the role of Audioboo, how that's changing, and the fascinating role it could play as an archive of human life. You know, if sounds like that, so your son when he's your age, yeah. he can listen to that. That was me.
It was, and it was kind of crazy because within a couple of minutes, that it was on the Guardian website. I think actually me talking about what just happened because wow. I forgot. It was so important for me to document that moment. The only way for me to do it was from an app which was going to share and unaware that it was tweeting and kind of hoping that my brother would be kind of listening to this and know everything was okay. Before you know it, the world is listening to it. Mm. That was, for me, so powerful. And if we can share more of these cultural moments, these intimate moments in such a public way, and I think people care. But even when it comes to audio.
Also in a private way, because, for example, my children have never heard the voice of their grandmother. Now, that would have been nice. I did record their great aunt. I sat with her for an hour and a half and talked about the family history, and I've got that archive, so I can play it to my children. And it's wonderful. It captures so much of the soul of a person when you actually hear them talk, much more than a picture ever would, I think.
I totally agree, and I made a point of recording my grandmother, which ended up on Canadian radio because we were using Twitter. She was 87 at the time. She's 89 now, I believe. People were asking her questions through social that I thought I knew the answers to. And when she was responding and giving me different answers, no, I didn't work in a restaurant as a waitress during the war. I was a partisan smuggling messages in my bicycle seat past the Germans. She's Italian. And I'm like, it took somebody on the internet to ask that. So I desperately wanted to record that. And I'm so glad that I did. And I'm so glad that not only has that gone on to inspire others, but it will be there for hopefully generations to come.
Well, you know what? I think there is a huge potential for the collision between sound and technology, which is really unexplored at the moment. I mean, Audioboo is great. It's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much we can do. I mean, you've been pushing this frontier, but I'm really excited about the next few years, and I hope that maybe this conversation I hope this conversation will inspire some people to go further and start thinking about ways that technology can enhance audio and give us audio that's going to make our lives richer and more valuable and make us more present as well.
And just to remember that it's all around us, it's everywhere, it's happening all the time, and we just have to notice it more.
Yeah, definitely. Christian, it's just a delight, always a delight to see you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Cheers.